With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Mark Zuckerman, MassinSports.com at 6. We're with you until 6:30. We're talking Scott Turner, who met with the media today out in Ashburn. Played a bunch of the clips of his conversation with the media already. So one of the things I've really liked about Turner over the last couple years, Danny, I love that he understands the value of throwing the ball to the running back. And when he came to Washington, I was not sure if that was a product of the fact that he was coaching in an offense Christian McCaffrey in Carolina, or if he knew what the analytics people around football have long talked about, which is that the most underutilized way of moving the football and probably the safest, most efficient way of doing it is to throw it to the running back. And there was for a long time, there still kind of is, people pick and choose this. There is this knock on throwing to the guys out of the backfield as a check down Charlie, but only if it's a guy you don't like, right? So if Carson Wentz or Kirk Cousins or Derek Carr do it, well, then they're just idiots who can't throw the ball down the field. When Tom Brady is down 28-3 and throws the ball to James White 16 times, he's a genius and no quarterback has ever been as smart as him and he's the best quarterback who ever lived and, oh my God, he brought them all the way back even though his average depth of target was, you know, negative 19 yards to his tailback all game long. So I love throwing the ball to the running back. I think it's smart. I think it works. And we had Scott Turner on before last season, and I remember asking him about that. And he basically said to him he views it as extra carries, like higher upside, if I could say that, runs, so to speak, where it's basically a handoff but into space. Everyone likes the running game. You know what I mean? Everyone.
Yeah.
Chris Russell, all these folks we talk to that love the running game because it wears the defense down and it's part of the balance and you don't understand the positives even if you're not getting yards. You can still accomplish all those things with immediate short passes where that thumping at the line of scrimmage is happening and guys are getting the football. It's no different. And his point is, if we can throw the ball to a back and he's catching the ball 9 times out of 10, you know, 12 times out of 13 in terms of your target rate, if it's all behind the line of scrimmage, 12 out of 12 times, how is that any different than a pitch? How is that any different than a handoff? His understanding and grasp of that, and you've seen it by way of McKissick among other backs on this team, is I think my favorite thing about him.
I'm with you in the sense that it's not it. Well, the Alex Smith on 3rd and 12 throwing it to the running back for 4 yards, that's not that awesome. It's the early down throwing to running backs that is so efficient and so smart and keep you ahead of the sticks and make people defend the entire width of the field. And it is just the most efficient way to move the football, again, especially on the early downs. And you see a good deal of that. And that's why I always stump as soon as we get into the season. Where is J.D. McKissick on my early downs? Why do we have to wait till 3rd down for it? Let's do some early down McKissicking. Let's do some early down throws to Antonio Gibson or Brian Robinson and company. But I'm with you. It is probably my favorite thing about him. And again, we've seen the short passing game dominate over the last couple of years, and we've had to wonder, are there great deep routes incorporated? Is it like, you know, short, medium, long in every passing tree and every route concept? Or is it just we have to throw it short because we've had noodle arm quarterbacks or inaccurate quarterbacks or guys that weren't really ready or no weapons to go downfield? Now you would see with this full cadre of really good players, potentially skilled guys that can do something with the football. Yeah. Now maybe we're going to open things up and be able to see something more dynamic. It's what I'm fascinated about this year.
Another thing I have really liked is I think he does a good job at involving his best players. You know, my favorite football quote probably from an OC ever is from Mike Leach at the college level when he talks about balance. And he says, balance is not run pass. You know, balance is not you run it 50% of the time and you pass it 50% of the time. That's 50% stupid, which I think is just so great. I love that quote. He talks about balance as who are your, and I'm explaining this in my own words, but who are your four best players? So if it's Terry McLaurin and J.D. McKissick and Logan Thomas and Jahan Dotson, then balance is making sure all four of those guys get the ball enough, you know, three times each, four times each, whatever that is. Well, if you go back to the early part of last year, before you get punched in the mouth and you kind of have to adjust and change your plan, I view the first handful of weeks as like ideal, right? What you'd prefer. Terry McLaurin was routinely getting double-digit targets. 14 targets in week 2 against the Giants. 13 in week 4 against Atlanta. 11 in week 5 against New Orleans. 12 in week 7 against Green Bay. He had 8 in week 6 against Kansas City. 7 in week 3 against Buffalo. As the year went on, he pretty much got targeted 7 or 8 times in almost every single game. There were like 2 games when he got banged up around week 13 where he was not targeted that often. And it was when their offense kind of fell apart at the seams and Heinicke completely regressed. But I think just as a general rule, the job of the OC going into a game is to in some way decide before the game starts, all right, who are the guys that I have to involve as much as possible? And whoever those guys are in a given week, I think he does a really good job calling some plays for them. You're not the trigger man. You can't force a throw to Terry McLaurin. All you can do is try to help get the ball to him. Maybe occasionally you can force it to him by way of a bubble or something where there's no read, there's no defense that you have to worry about. But just by and large, how many times in the past have you been watching a game thinking, how is this team not thrown to this guy yet? You know, you remember the Randy Moss rules in Minnesota back in the day? When yeah. I think it was Mike Tyson, it was kind of a dumb idea, but he's like, we have to throw to him 15 times every game or whatever it was. Something along those lines where you just, who do you love today? Well, Terry had a great week of practice, or J.D. McKissick's a matchup problem. Let's make sure he gets targeted 7-8 times. I do think he does a pretty good job at that. He never gets too far away. It's not two quarters between when you see your best dudes involved.
There were some times, though, if you remember last year, we're kind of going, I can't have that half of football where Terry McLaurin didn't get a target. I can't have that. We got away from it a couple different times, I think. And generally, though, I agree with you. I think that is something that Scott Turner knows and leans on. And I would say also, you know, last year's roster with Curtis Samuel's, you know, ghost and J.D. McKissick banged up at times, the whole world knew it was going to 17. So I understand they're going to take some things away from you. But, you know, it was sort of up to you, Scott Turner, to figure out how to get him the football. And there were a couple moments where you and I went, hey, wait a minute, we can't go that long without 17 getting the ball. I know we're not scoring 40 points today. That's not in the cards. But we need to make sure we find a way. If we're going down, it's going down with our best guy. But I agree with you in general. He does find a way to do that. And, again, now here's the challenge. It's are there too many mouths to feed this year to make sure you're doing that? And how do you prioritize it while developing a young player like Dotson, kind of incorporated in with a couple veteran pass catchers that have been pretty efficient?
Well, one of my frustrations, if we want to get into those, over the last couple of years with Turner, and I will say that he basically gets graded on a curve for me. I bet you there's a lot of people listening who say, man, you're way too soft on him. You're way too easy on him. And I just have a philosophical disagreement with you probably, because I don't flunk anyone calling plays who has bad quarterback room, period. I don't give out D's to anyone calling plays who has a bad quarterback room. You could be the worst coordinator ever. I won't know it until you got a good quarterback. So I'm basically looking for positives almost and explaining away and excusing your negatives, which you could say, well, you could end up being wrong, and you're absolutely right. But I know that it is impossible to have a high-ranking offense if you're having bad quarterback play. And if you don't have a good quarterback room and situation, as a coordinator, you just can't possibly look good. The guys that get jobs, Kevin O'Connell, Matt Stafford just won Super Bowl MVP. You know, Kyle Shanahan had Griffin in 2012 have an illustrious and an incredible rookie season. And then he came off of Matt Ryan as the league MVP, going to the Super Bowl, gets the job. You know, Matt LaFleur gets a head coaching job after, you know, being in L.A. with Sean McVay, seeing Goff completely turn it around, then Marcus Mariota having a career year with the Titans. He didn't even really get to work with great quarterbacks, but he just got good results from bad quarterbacks or average ones. I mean, that's how this has to work, right? So I do. You're right. I'm probably the easiest grader in the world if you have a bad quarterback, but that's just how I see it, and maybe it's a flaw. Having said
no,
that,
I view it as incomplete. I just don't. Yeah. I don't know how their last year. Now I disagree with the front office, aka Ron and the Martys. They're going Fitzpatrick, Samuel. We did it. You know, we solved it. And I'm going, well, you didn't. But whatever.
Well, exactly.
That
and I have blew issue
up
with
in
that.
10 seconds. Yeah,
I'm annoyed by that, but I'm not going to hold that unless Scott Turner went into their office and said, "If yeah. you guys add talent for me, I'm going to be angry." You know, if he's like, "I don't want right. talent. I want to work with a bunch of Jags." Well, then, okay, and now I think differently about Scott Turner. My guess is he never
Precisely.
Had that meeting.
Yeah, so we're going, okay, let's see what happens. And again, Curtis Samuel was just never available. Ryan Fitzpatrick, 6 passes in, donezo. And that's it. I said before the season, now we can evaluate Scott Turner. That was taken away from him, and you started a million quarterbacks. They all stunk, and injuries all over the board. I'm going, okay, now it's incomplete for me. I don't know how we can evaluate him.
He Cam Sims the best is your wide receiver,
yeah.
too.
He could have called the greatest play in the world, and Taylor Heinicke could have been late and underthrown, and it could have been a touchdown if anybody decent had been back there. We just have no earthly idea. And again, I'm saying the same thing I said last year at this point. Hopefully health ensues, we get to evaluate. But for me, if we're talking my gripes with Turner, and again, this is I don't know if this is his fault, GP. This is what's been so hard to evaluate. I need my big plays. So few. Antonio Gibson screened to the house on kind of a weird, you know, everybody fell down. It was like a Bo Jackson Tecmo Bowl moment early in the season. That's your long pass play of the year. I need big strikes. I need chunks. I need 20-yard plays. I need a 2nd and 5 to turn into a field position change. I need long passes. I'm not talking about every play. We're not dropping back and scrambling around like, you know, we're using Mike Vick and Madden back in the day. But there's got to be more chunks in this chunk yardage league. You've got playmakers now. That's the thing that's got to change for me. Red zone is number 2, but I want to see your reaction to chunk plays. They just need more of them, man.
Well, I agree, but I think those come from players. I mean, way more than scheme. You can certainly scheme some big stuff. You know, Kyle for years did a nice job here, even with secondary tight end options on, you know, what he called his leak play with the tight end, where he would kind of get everyone moving in one direction, bootleg, and then he'd throw back across the grain, and it always hit for 30, 35 type yards, something like that. Like, yeah, there are some things like that lack from time to time. But I think when you look around the league more often than not, the guys that make the chunk plays are supposed to. You don't just have random dudes off practice squads or undrafted free agents who were blockers at the wide receiver position like Cam Sims turning in those chunks. And last year he made a hell of a play on a touchdown for 40-plus yards. But they're just going to be fewer and far between. But, yes, I agree with you. Absolutely, you need him scheming those things up. I'll say this. I was super disappointed last year in the lack of creativity and trick plays from Scott Turner. Because remember, after his first year, I thought, you know, they did some really out-of-the-box cool stuff. The
Logan Thomas quarterback sneak,
the
man.
The Logan Thomas quarterback sneak was one of the coolest plays I've seen this organization run in years and years and years. I'll stack the creativity of that play up against anything Kyle Shanahan did individually, you know, on one snap. I would say the same thing about with, you know, that fumble Ruski play. I think Ron Rivera said they got it from the Little Giants, which I'm not sure if that's true or not, but it made for a good story. Remember when they had, I think it was like McKissick or someone kind of leaning like right down behind the line at the, uh-huh. and they acted like it was a fumbled snap, and then he came around the end. Like, that was awesome. That kind of stuff, that you should be trying that kind of stuff, especially when you don't have the athletes as everybody else. And mm-hmm. last year when Taylor Heinicke's your quarterback and you're going through COVID issues and you're not as talented as other teams. Heck, you were eliminated from the playoffs with a few weeks to go. None of that came back. Like, there were no passes from a wide receiver, double passes downfield. I don't need one of those every drive. I don't need one of those every game. But it would be nice over the course of a year to feel like someone's drawing something down on a napkin, you know? And the year before last, I thought Scott Turner was probably doing yeah. that as frequently and as well as anyone in the league, and it kind of went away.
I like that. I mean, and part of that, I know we had a caller complain about this before the break, but I look at their red zone percentage. I'm down at the bottom of the league with some of the dregs. Giants, Lions, Bears, Commanders, right behind Jacksonville, by the way, talking about red zone touchdown percentage. They're if you don't have the horses, if you do have the horses, by the way, you don't have to complicate it. You get the ball to one of your studs. With, you know, if Logan Thomas is healthy, that's a matchup nightmare. If Cole Turner is healthy, I think he can help you. Curtis Samuel on a little end around. Whatever it is, you don't have to be crazy. When you don't have the horses, that's the time to get weird, man. Space is limited. You know, do something out of the box. Spread people out. Put five wide receivers on the field and then have one of those guys take the handoff because you got, you know, a dime package. Maybe you got a chance to win a one-on-one running back matchup. Just something different out of the box. They were dreadful, dreadful, dreadful in the red zone last year. That percentage just has to come up dramatically if they have any chance at the kind of season they want to have.
The only problem with, as I like to say, getting cute, but really it's getting creative, in the red zone is that caller's point, and that's how everyone thinks. If you mm-hmm. do something out of the box and it doesn't work, and you only get a couple of those snaps, you idiot! How dare you not score? You know how the nerve of you to try something other than if it works, you're a genius, and if it doesn't, you're an idiot. And in the red zone, that's just more the case than any other place on the field. Obviously, who were the teams that were best in the red zone? Because I'd be willing to bet you just named all the teams that were worst. They all had terrible quarterback seasons last year. I think the red zone is where quarterbacks make their money, and I'd be willing to bet some of the better QBs in the league are some of the teams that rank really high.
So initially, I think that's generally how I would feel, but look at this. San Francisco, number one in the red zone. That's Kyle Shanahan,
well,
baby.
Okay, but also teams that run the ball really well are always good in the red zone. Because you can, you know, you run the ball for six from the 11, and now it's second and goal from the five, you know, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Bucks number two, Brady and tons of weapons. Seattle with Russell Wilson. I was surprised by that, as bad as their offense was.
Also, the run first team that makes some sense to me.
Chargers, Herbert, Titans five. Just again, Derrick Henry when he's available. That's a thumper in the red zone. When he wasn't available, they were still pretty good though.
Yeah, they've done a nice job scheming that up even without Arthur Smith last year. But yeah, I do think that's where being a really physical team can help you down in, near the goal line, for sure. Those teams often rank pretty high there. Let's go to Chris in Oxon Hill on Grant and Danny. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how's it going, fellas? I really appreciate y'all taking my call. Well, I just wanted to, you know, give a quick opinion about Scott Turner and some of the weapons that he has this year. I think that he's going to do some good things, you know, but I think the one way that we'll determine it is – as soon as we get the ball on offense, I want to say the past couple of years we haven't scored when we got the ball on offense on our first drive. So on our opening drive, if we can score, then that will show me that, you know, things are going in a positive direction. But if we still see the quick pass three and out on our first time getting the ball, then that's showing me that we'll probably be in the same place where we've been for the past couple of years. And my last thing is I wanted to say, because I heard you talking about going to Steve Wrestling yesterday, just Grant, who would you consider your favorite wrestler back in the past? Thanks again for taking my call.
Appreciate you. I was Attitude Era. So I love the Generation X, Triple H, X-Pac, Badass Billy Gunn, Road Dogg Jesse James, The New, Age, Outlaws. A favorite wrestler ever would have been The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, high on that list. Mankind was killing it at that time, so I enjoyed him with Sacco. But really, that whole era was fantastic. But I would say DX probably, or The Rock, or my guys. Chris in Springfield, what's up?
Hey, what's up, guys? So hey, I was thinking that I think this is – I've noticed a different tone in Ron's everyday interviews, and he's a lot more testy, and I think it's the kind of it's setting the tone for the year that either people are going to be held more to account for poor play. I'm going to make a prediction. I don't think Antonio Gibson is going to make the squad, and I wouldn't be surprised if De'Ami Brown gets cut too, because if he's not flashing in the preseason and they're only going to carry five wide receivers and Brian Robinson can do everything that Antonio Gibson is missing, I think Ron's going to make some statements. I think if they can't trade him, he gets cut this offseason.
So you get full credit if that happens. I've heard no one say that. I'd be stunned.
I'd be stunned.
They don't cut their own draft picks. They don't like how that looks. But on top of that, he's a good enough football player that he should be on the team. But your point is, more so than anything else, that he's going to just make a statement and this is a way to send a shot across the bow. I don't see that. I'd bet against it. But you give him credit. Chris in Springfield, first one to say it. even though I think that's off base. Here's my stat that I promised real quick before we get out of here, Danny. So the analytic number I told you that I hated about their play calling last year. Second down run rate after an incompletion. All right, this is a pet peeve of mine. First and 10, you throw an incompletion, okay? On second and 10, I think a lot of people feel like you need to then run the football to get something back. It's actually, unless you're really good at it, one of the worst things that you can do.
Because
if you run on second and 10 after an incompletion, you more often than not have third and long, and frequently have third and really long. It's a terrible offensive philosophy. Terrible. Washington was fourth in the NFL at how often they ran it after first and 10 incompletion. The correct thing to do analytically is to throw something safe and short that gets you a handful of yards. Could be a design screen to a receiver, could be a slant, could be something quick to a tight end, crosser, drag route, something. The teams that were worse, the Giants, who fired their coach and their coordinator in season, by the way, the Lions, the Titans, obviously Detroit, Dan Campbell, smash mouth, Tennessee, running back who might be the best in football, and then Washington was tied with the Vikings and the Bears. Disappointing Minnesota team that had a dinosaur for a head coach and a Bears team that was awful. 64,
I was going to say the Mesozoic era teams.
Exactly. 64% of the time, after a first down incompletion, Scott Turner called a run play on second down.
And it doesn't mean you do it 100% of the time the other way either, but I'd flip those.
60%
so should be the other way.
Yeah. Here are the teams that throw it the most on second down after a first down incompletion. Ready? The Bucks, dead last in this category, or first, as I would say. 11% of the time, they would run it on second and 10. The Bengals, 18% of the time, they would run it on second and 10. The Chiefs, 21% of the time. The Cardinals, 22% of the time. San Francisco, 24% of the time. And then you've got the Packers, the Rams, and the Patriots tied at 27th at 25% of the time.
Quite I didn't see a running theme in those offenses. What was
all
it?
Eight of those teams made the playoffs. Every single one of those eight teams. This is not really debatable. I mean, I'm sure we'll have a debate and people will say, oh, whatever. It's just numbers. No, it's information. Second and 10 should be a passing down in this league. And then someone will say, well, if it's incomplete, then it's third and 10. You're right. That's true. Also,
run it then, buddy.
Please throw the ball on second and 10. Grant and Danny on the Fan. All right, next, we'll go AFC first, actually. The AFC teams that are underrated and overrated going into the season. G&D on the Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny welcoming you back on the Fan. We'll talk Nats ahead of their game with the Cubs, looking for back-to-back wins at Nationals Park in Game 2 with C.J. Abrams. Mark Zuckerman, MassinSports.com, joins us in a half hour. We'll ask him about Abrams' debut with the team yesterday and Patrick Corbin being back in the rotation tonight. Also, is it Cade Cavalli time? When are we going to see the much-anticipated pitching prospect make his first start. That's all coming up here on GND. All right, Danny, let's go AFC first here. I'm looking for a team that you think is undervalued right now. Who's not getting enough run?
Baltimore Ravens. I have been beating this drum. Over-under's 9.5, so it's not as if everybody thinks they're going to stink, but they lost their final six games last year while being ravaged, absolutely ravaged by injuries. Five of those six losses, one of those was a blowout, so this kind of doesn't apply, but those other five were by a combined total of 8 points, multiple one-point losses in there. Just normal coin toss type regression things. Say you win a couple of those games, they have a dramatically different season. If that's the case, I think the Ravens are poised to jump right back to the top of this division, especially with some uncertainty hanging over Cleveland and Deshaun Watson's head.
I'm going to go with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that's not to say that I think they're going to be a Super Bowl contender or that they can win the AFC or anything like that. But you know what I did label them as a couple weeks ago? I think they're a team that could make the playoffs. And there is a compilation on this site I'm looking at of the average of a bunch of sports books and the odds, basically, for every team. And of all 16 of the teams in the AFC, they're listed 13th among the odds that they're getting to win the conference, behind teams like Vegas, Miami, New England, and others. Pittsburgh has not had a losing season under Mike Tomlin. I know that no one thinks Kenny Pickett can play because he had small hands. I'm not sure how good he's going to be, but I do think that if he's just okay somehow, they're going to compete every single week. They're going to win their fair share of games because they've got a good coaching staff, they play really good defense, and I will tell everyone to look out for George Pickens. Their wide receiver looks like the truth.
Baller.
He is getting rave reviews, him and Deontay Johnson. They still have Chase Claypool. They drafted Calvin Austin in the fourth round. They've got Miles Boykin, who came over from Baltimore. It's a pretty deep receiving core. So I think the Steelers are being slept on just a little bit. What team in the AFC do you think is being overvalued?
Miami. They were a winning team last year at 9-8, and the metrics said that they weren't. I mean, they were outscored over the course of the season. You know, they were in the realm of a team that would finish 7-10 in terms of their point differential. And everyone thinks now that they got Tyreek Hill, there were too many issues in that group. Again, especially defensively, I'm not really sure that Tua is going to be the guy that I thought he was coming out of Alabama a couple seasons ago. I'm just sort of not buying the hype on them. People have them as a playoff team, over-unders. I've seen 8.5, 9 in a lot of books. I'm just not really seeing it in that division where I think the Patriots are still going to be around, and maybe as Mac Jones takes a step forward, Buffalo's a Super Bowl favorite. I just don't think the math is going to work for them to be a postseason team this year.
When you look at AFC title odds in a lot of places, you're going to see Bills, Chiefs, Chargers, and then the fourth team is the Denver Broncos. That's not working for me. I'm sorry. I do think Denver could, over the next couple of years, become a championship-level program. I like the head coaching hire. I'm a big Nathaniel Hackett guy. I actually like a lot of what they've done this offseason, namely bringing in Russell Wilson, obviously, at quarterback.
Yeah.
But he is coming off of the worst season of his career, and I think maybe it's a little bit overstated to say this, but I think there's some small chance that maybe that was the beginning of a regression for him. He's also been banged up over the last couple of years. They've already lost a wide receiver for the season with a torn ACL who's important in Tim Patrick. Now, luckily, they've got enough in that room. Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, K.J. Hamler, Montrell Washington, Kendall Hinton, among others. But Tim Patrick's a pretty good player. That's one weapon gone, not ideal. I do love their backfield with Javonte Williams, who could be a star, and Melvin Gordon, who's still pretty good, and they split time, and I would guess Williams will get more and more carries as the fantasy community wants. But remember, their defense the last couple years has been their calling card. Vic Fangio, gone. That was their head coach. Now you go offensive-minded head coach, which I like. You bring in Russell Wilson. I wouldn't be surprised if their offense gets a lot better and their defense takes a pretty substantial step back. And they are something like an 8-9 or a 9-8 team. Oh, by the way, in a juggernaut of a division. With the Chiefs, with a much-improved Chargers team, with a Raiders team that made the playoffs last year and then went and got Davante Adams. There's just a lot of crowning of Denver because Russell Wilson's there. I think it's a little bit aggressive at this point. So let's go back then to the last category. Let's go another team that you are thinking is underrated, Danny.
New England Patriots. It's fun to write them off. It's fun to kick dirt. Everybody thinks of them as kind of this plodding, meandering team from last year. They won 10 games despite having a rookie quarterback that was basically there to check it down and not really do anything. As they've sort of put more and more on his plate, they've spent gobs of money in free agency. They were looking for kind of a recreation of that wonderful two tight end system that was so effective for them years ago. You know what they're going to do defensively. They'll be solid. They'll be, you know, held to account. Their running game is really good. I like them to creep up and challenge Buffalo in that division. Over under of 8.5 wins, I think that's a playoff team. I don't think you're going to have that group be kept down for too long. It's not what it was. It's not the AFC dynasty where they go to, you know, 60% of the AFC title games, but I think that group is going to be pretty good. We're just sort of not counting them because it's not that much fun.
I don't think this team is probably even going to make the playoffs. Wouldn't be shocked if at 9-8 they could squeak in the last wild card spot. I think they're probably more likely an 8-win type team, but I'm not sure anyone's predicting it. The New York Jets, they had as good an offseason, I think, as anybody in the league, and I think the best draft of anybody in football, not named the Baltimore Ravens. Very, very high on what's happened the last 2 years from a personnel standpoint there. Not sold on Robert Saleh as a head coach. Loved his high-energy ways as a defensive coordinator in San Francisco. Mike LaFleur, Matt's little brother, guy that I didn't really know well because he wasn't in Washington on that staff. But since went to the NFL and worked with Kyle Shanahan. He's got his work cut out for him this year, obviously. But they have much better weapons. Zach Wilson, it sounds like, is going to be ready in week one. Had he have been hurt, and it's the Joe Flacco show, I'd feel a lot worse about the Jets. But you got Zach Wilson. They drafted Breece Hall. They brought in Garrett Wilson as a wide receiver one. They still have Corey Davis and Elijah Moore. I worry a little bit about the offensive line, but I do think they make major strides this year. So I'll say they're a little bit undervalued. Give me another overvalued team.
There are a couple to choose from here, but I'm going to stay in the same division that you went a moment ago. I think the Raiders are not bad. I think if the Raiders were in a different division, they might be a favorite. But I just think that group is too crowded. You mentioned if the Chargers were healthy, I think they're a force. Kansas City is as good a conference title favorite as anybody. I do think Denver is going to be better. I don't know if they're 3 or 4 games better, as some folks are predicting. I just think the Raiders are going to be okay, and kind of victims of the fact that they're in the best division probably in all of football. I don't know that they're as good maybe as able to sort of rise up regardless of who else is in that division. I think they end up winning probably 8 games and maybe are an odd team looking out, even though they're better than a lot of teams that will make the playoffs.
I'll go with the Cincinnati Bengals coming off their Super Bowl run. It's just really hard to recapture that magic, stuff it back into the bottle, and drink it again. It's not going to taste the same. You went on the magical carpet ride, as I like to call it. That doesn't happen the next year. So a lot of the things that went their way probably won't this time around. You already saw Joe Burrow have, I think it was an appendectomy right at the start of camp and miss some time. He'll be okay. He's going to get back healthy, right? And he's going to be on the field. But to me, that was just a sign of, okay, this is a very different year for the Bengals. I think right now, at most books, they're right around top 6 in the conference in terms of chances to win the AFC. And I would take teams like the Colts over them, maybe even the Titans, who were the 1 seed last year. Baltimore, as you said, who's right there with them, I like better in the division. It's just not an easy division either. If Deshaun Watson is only suspended 6 or 8 games, you know, then you have 3 teams that could beat you anytime you play them, and that's 6 total games over the course of the season. And that's your AFC dive. Let's take the NFC jump next. Teams that we are higher on, lower than everybody else. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to
other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Top of the hour in 15 minutes. We'll check in with Mark Zuckerman of MassinSports.com out at Nationals Park. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. Closing in on preseason week number two. By the way, it is Tuesday, which means Hard Knocks tonight on HBO, the Dan Campbell Detroit Lions experience. Now, Danny, you did not watch Hard Knocks 1.0 last week, right?
I haven't yet, no. I've been away from my home box office network. I will be reuniting probably Friday, actually, when I come see your smiling faces in the studio, and I will catch up. I just want to hear him eat kneecaps and be so angry and just be a football guy and like try to get two guys to headbutt each other so like who gets concussed less gets to start. I just want to see that Neanderthal go about his business.
Well, he was made for Hard Knocks, I will tell you that. Yeah. So it's everything you ever wanted it to be. But tonight's the night, 10 p.m. I will have a breakdown of my highlights and lowlights of the episode tomorrow right here on Grant and Danny. All right, let's get into the NFC. We just went AFC, so this is our thoughts on teams that are overrated and underrated, so you go first.
You want me to go over or under first? You tell me.
Call your shot.
I'm going to go overrated. The New Orleans Saints, I don't see it. People seem to see this group as a threat to win the division. I guess somebody has to, I mean, or make the playoffs. I mean, obviously, I think Tampa Bay is the class of that division. I just don't really see things with the New Orleans Saints. Alvin Kamara's got a legal case hanging over his head, and there's uncertainty about when that's going to be. His court date, he may play, but he may not. Who knows what the suspension's going to be? Michael Thomas, I guess, allegedly has looked good in practice at times, but again, we're a long way away from a guy that caught 177 balls, whatever the heck it was, over the last couple of years. I don't love the roster. I don't love this org right now. New head coach. There's no more Sean Payton magic. I don't see them as a real threat.
San Francisco 49ers, I think, will make the playoffs and be good, but they are, in some books, the third highest best odds, I should say, to win the conference behind teams like the Bucs and the Packers. I like the Rams more than them. I understand you could say they're equal footing with Dallas or Philadelphia, and I've made the case that if Trey Lance is just decent, then
he's
they're
fine.
A 10-win team. Because they have been that with Jimmy Garoppolo, who was the epitome of average. If you have Lance just not turn the ball over, make some plays with his feet, and make a few throws, a la, say, like a Jalen Hurts in Philly when it's been good. If you can get that out of him, I really believe this could be an 11-6 or a 10-7 team and be a tough out in the playoffs. I don't dislike them. All I'm saying is maybe it's just a sign that the conference is down. For them to be the third best chance of winning the conference at some places, it just seems bullish to me when they're turning things over to a quarterback who is, for all intents and purposes, a rookie on the field, a sophomore that we know so little about, got to say, San Francisco. I'll go with the team that is being undervalued this season, and I'm going to say Washington, honestly.
Mm.
I know that that's play into my base. I'm a WWE team cutting a promo here. But you know that I feel like they're going to win 10 games and make the playoffs. No one thinks that. I mean, sports books have them winning, what, 7.5, 8?
7.5, yeah.
I don't understand that. And even if they don't win 10, they're going over that. I think Wentz will be a dramatic upgrade from Heinicke, and I believe that they will be able to play enough defense with this terribly soft schedule, a bad division, a mediocre conference to just be beneficiaries. That's all they have to be is a beneficiary. So I just think that if you're looking for a place where people are not quite adjusted, normally the public is always wrong on Washington. They're always a year off. Last year they thought they're going to be really good. I came into the year going, no, they're not. It's such an easy schedule they took advantage of. Everyone thinks they're good. They have a hard schedule this year. They're going to be bad. People were wrong. This year, I think it's the opposite. Now everyone's just reacting to what they did last year, and I'm saying the same thing. Although the reverse, though, is it's a really easy schedule. You're underrating them. So give me Washington.
Minnesota Vikings are an underrated team for me. They were only outscored by a total of 1 point last year, and we think of them as kind of this disaster, sort of a tire fire, couldn't get out of their own way. A couple teams at the bottom of their division. I think the Bears are going to stink. I think Detroit is not ready for prime time just yet. They got a chance to harvest their nuts there. They've got the Jets out of conference. They'll play the Giants. So there's a chance for them, just by being okay, to win enough of those games. You go, you know, you win 40%, maybe even 500 of some of the other games that are a bit more challenging. That could absolutely be a playoff team. I think with a little bit more forward thinking at head coach, that group could overcome and be a postseason team. The second one out of that NFC North.
Eagles, Cowboys, either one of those, I think is probably overrated. I mean, one of those two teams is going to win this division. But the other I could see finishing third behind Washington and just being an ultra disappointment. Which is more likely to disappoint? Because Dak was not the same at all last year as he was before his injury. Ezekiel Elliott's getting a little long in the tooth. Maybe I'm talking myself into Dallas being that team right now. They led the NFL. They were tied with the Indianapolis Colts in takeaways. That's not something that normally carries over. They had 33 takeaways defensively last year. If that 33 becomes, say, like 22 this year, Elliott shows a little age, Dak doesn't become what he was pre-injury, they could pretty easily be an 8-9 team.
Losing CeeDee Lamb, losing Amari Cooper, you know, thrusting CeeDee Lamb into the spotlight. You're still paying a ton of money for Zeke Elliott. It's not a crazy take, man. By the way, there's never been less hype for a team coming off a 12-5 season than there is this year for the Dallas Cowboys. People are kind of predicting that regression, so I don't necessarily think that's a crazy take.
Because they lost a lot. Like, they didn't add much. They basically sat out free agency like Washington did. They lost more than they gained. All right, go ahead.
I was just going to say, my underrated team, you touched on, I think the Eagles take a step. I think the Eagles win this division. I think Jalen Hurts does just enough in terms of developing as a passer. Their run game is dynamic. They've added weapons all over the field. I think they've upgraded that defense. I think they're poised to make a leap.
With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Good to be able to dive back into football in mid-August football, as we get ready to kick off week two of the preseason. All right, let's go out to Nats Park. C.J. Abrams, game number two with the Nats. We get some thoughts on his debut last night. Patrick Corbin back in the rotation for a start this evening. Mark Zuckerman, MassinSports.com, joins us next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.